Welcome to the Freedom Friends Show, where we introduce you to all of the different techniques that you can take in order to make more freedom friends. Those who either help you get clients, support you with your clients, or those who just simply help you achieve some level of freedom in your life or business.
Make sure the audio is still good.
All righty now. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome, Mr. Dominic Graham, to the Freedom Friends Show. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you for having me. You know, I'm just appreciative that you allowed someone like me come on.
Oh my God, you got to be kidding.
I'm serious.
Yeah,
okay. I'm surprised people ever want to ask me to do shows and stuff like that. I'm just
serious. Okay, so you're like the third person in a row who swear they're not famous. I'm assuming that's what you're gonna say.
Right? I'm far Nobody from knows famous. You. I am far from famous.
All right, you know Tiffany Alice, she said the same thing. All these every
well, Tiffany Alice is sponsored by Ford and
exactly.
She Prudential. Said the same thing. I have no sponsorships. I'm humbled by yes. every request to be on an interview.
Yes. You have none yet.
I don't want any.
Oh, see, look.
I don't want none.
You have none because you don't want none.
Yeah, I don't do no speaking engagements, no nothing. I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Dude, you speak every day. I see you on Periscope. Okay, so let me just introduce you for those who may not be familiar. This is Mr. Dominic Brown, who is the author of the blog, YourFinancesSimplified.com. He's a licensed financial advisor, realtor, best-selling author, business coach, motivational speaker, ass kicker on Periscope.
Part-time comedian.
Part-time comedian, hip-hop head.
I did win a high school talent show as lip-singing, also D'Angelo, How Does It Feel? Okay. I think
no, oh, that is serious, him, right?
That's facts.
In Tim's? Is this what I remember? You had
in Tim's, I had cornrows the whole nine. So, you okay. know, multifaceted. I try.
Husband and father.
True. True.
Okay. So, I mean, hopefully we covered it off. So, for anyone who, let's just get it, you know, say it up front. Where can they find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at Your Finances Simplified. You can find me on Facebook at Dominic Brown or Your Finances Simplified. And you can always catch me on Periscope at You Are Finance Simple. And that's my Twitter handle as well. Also, I tell people to just text me 703-298-3803. I'm probably the only person that gives their actual number out to the world.
Okay. Hey, I love it. So, and all of that is part of the reason that I wanted you on the show. You are like one of the most down. First off, you're like one of a handful of brothers that I've seen in the personal finance space, which is outstanding and amazing to me because I come from corporate accounting. That was my first level of training. So it's always awesome to see people of color doing that thing. Number two, your branding was off the chain. So I was definitely thoroughly impressed with that. Number three, you were just super down to earth. Everything that you said, I mean, I come from the financial, I understand financial services. And so I'm always astonished and amazed when I see people who are in personal finance, but who speak plain English.
Mm.
So I was like thoroughly like, yes, I hope he'll say yes. So when you did, I was just like.
I think that's the key part, because I think there's a stigma when it comes to personal finances and African Americans in general. But just when you think of personal finance or you think of wealth, they try to make it seem like it's a suit and tie thing and it's real stuffy and it's boring. And yes, I do wear the suit and tie, blah, blah, blah. But,
but you know where
I want to talk to you as if I am your cousin I'm that rich cousin that you got who just knows a whole bunch of stuff, who's been through it, is going to tell you, oh, go through A, B, and C, you'll get there. I think people need to be talked to and not talked at.
Mm.
And as soon as you start talking to a person and you actually are using their language and they understand like, okay, this person isn't speaking from above me. He's speaking with me. We're in the same position. And as soon as you start talking like that, you're good. You are good. I think two people will try to make it too complicated when it's not. Just break stuff down. People will be smart enough to get it.
Well, and I'm okay. So tell me this. Why do you think people do that? Like, what do you think in us makes people want to those of us who, you know, have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, so to speak, make it so complicated that, complicated.
They want to make it, I think, and honestly, my whole angle is that I think people want to act like you can't get it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to use me or my company because you're not smart enough to get this stuff. You're not disciplined enough to do it. And in some instances, that might be the case, but that's not always the instance, mm-hmm. right? And the part that I hate is when people do start making money and they start talking about people who don't have money as if you should stop doing this, you should stop doing that, whereas you should just help them. Just help mm-hmm. them. Speak, meet people where they are. If this was fitness, you wouldn't say, oh, you suck because you can't run a marathon. You say, no, okay, let's walk a lap. Mm-hmm. to get you ready. So I think people need to take a step back, get off their high horse, meet people where they are and talk to them in the language that they can understand so they can do better.
Mm. So here's something I love that you phrased it the way you phrased it, because I just say you don't know it well enough. If you can't make it simple, that means you don't know it.
That is true. That is simply true. My theory is if you can't explain it to a eighth grader.
Yes.
You can't talk to them at a, because most, think about this for a second. Most of America is reading at
eighth grade level.
Yeah. So if you can't break it down in simple terms when your eighth grader says, you know what, I got you. You hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
You're hiding something.
When I say third grade, if you can't explain it to my grandmother, okay.
Good one.
You really don't know what you're talking about.
That's a good one.
So, okay, so how did you get started? How did you come to be in, you know, this personal finance guru when, you know, who plays Jay-Z on the webinars and wears a suit and tie?
Okay, so, and hold for a second. Let me close the door. I want noise. All right, I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, so I started with personal finance for me. I didn't do this for anybody else. My blog, if you read it, I was cataloging my net worth and my real estate holdings and my opinion. My blog was my journal of sorts just to talk shit about finances. And I honestly wasn't into finance. I came from a single parent household. My mother raised me in West Philadelphia. So I wasn't into finances until, you know, after I graduated in college and, you know, she had a hardship by going through divorce and I couldn't do anything. I didn't have the money nor the education to help my mother, the person who helped me so much, who shielded me from, you know, being a statistic or a product of my environment. So to me, it turned into, I never want this to happen to my family again, immediate or extended. So you have to be your first client.
Right.
So literally, all right, what can I do to help my mother again? And what can I do to help myself? So, you know, I'm reading every single last thing, I'm devouring everything. So I'm an IT nerd. I'm a systems guy. I was a program manager. That was my thing. I love that to the core, making excellent money in DC. You know, if anybody who knows anyone in DC, everyone makes six figures here. I was doing that at 23, 24. So when my mother went through what she went through, my thing was, how do you use this big income to change your generation, to have generational wealth? And what happened was my mother got back on her feet. I'm doing well. And she just basically said, you're really good at this. You make complex things simple. This is another thing. It's a difference between telling people what they're supposed to do and then inspiring them to be the person that they're supposed to be. Mm. And her words were, you actually inspire people to want more and to want better. So it's more than just the numbers. So it just turned into, you know what? Let me write this book because I'm tired of people asking me about credit questions. Let me write this book, How to Fix Your Credit. Became an Amazon bestseller. On the second page of the book, I said, credit repair is bullshit. Every person in the credit repair industry is full of shit as well. And then I realized that, damn, some people just don't have the discipline to follow through. Mm-hmm. So let me create a service And then that's what happened. I created a service and it all took off from there.
Wow. So how long have you been in business now?
I've been doing my financial planning firm since 2009. However, I didn't offer my service until 2014.
Wow. Oh, so just 2 years.
Yeah, I just started offering the service. Well, let me backtrack. So I offered the service in 2013, but my branding was off, as in I wasn't speaking to people how they wanted to be heard. I was telling them what they were supposed to do. My angle was financial freedom, investing, and wealth. And frankly, no one wanted to hear that. They wanted to hear credit scores. I want to buy a home. So what I did was I said, okay, I can do that too, because that was included in my program. I'm going to lead with that. And when you get inside, I'm going to show you how we need to do more.
Yes.
So my entire angle was
Give the people what they want.
Give the people what they want, but give a better product. So I literally targeted, you know, some of the big boys, Lexington Law, CreditRepair.com. I said, okay, what are they doing wrong? What are they doing differently? Don't be that. And then what happens is I deliver a better product to them at the same exact price. And now I have the systems and the team on the back end to be able to compete with them.
So
the only thing I can't compete with them is their marketing dollars.
Well, and I mean, technically, you almost don't have to, because I'm assuming if you do great service, you word of mouth.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, a lot of businesses and people need to realize is that 85% of your business will be referral business. You do good for somebody, they tell somebody else. It's much easier to close a referral. Referrals close at 95% clip, whereas cold leads or warm leads generally close, you know, more in the 6%, 10% range. If you're on the phone with people, you can close a whole lot higher. So, you know, my angle was that if I get people in the door, I do a great job, they're going to tell their brother, sister, aunt, cousins about me. And since I'm so personal, it's just easier to say, yo, that's Don, that's my guy. So I basically treat every client like they're my, you know,
friend. Okay.
Literally family.
I love it. So, okay. So I've got a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, how many clients do you have?
As of today, let me log into the system. Hold on. 489 active clients. And that doesn't include couples. That's just subscriptions. So I do have a couples plan and an individual plan.
Okay. How in the world does one man handle almost 500 people?
Well, it's not one man. So okay. I do have a team of seven, but my clients never hear from them. So I'm a fan of doing the high dollar, high contact work. So every communication with my client, that's from me. However, there are some things, some administrative things that we might need to do. I might need to send out a email, in which I've already done all my emails already out and built my systems for that. Or I might have to send out letters. I'm not doing that. I used to do that, but now I've trained my staff to do it in a repeatable manner so we can kind of get it done. So a lot of my communication is the nitty-gritty financial planning and being in contact. And I would say systems matter. And I'm very, very proactive. Like, a client will hear from me before they have to reach out, right? So when you're as proactive as I am, you can get out in front of a lot of the headaches, and it saves me a lot of time and energy.
That's awesome. What's your favorite system?
I got a few. I'm a huge, huge fan of Infusionsoft. I wasn't sold earlier on into the game, but what you can do with campaigns and tagging is next level. I mean, whether it's my financial planning side or my real estate side, I can communicate with people through that system in any manner that I want to, and it comes off as individualized, right? Mm-hmm. So I know if it's an active client versus someone who just canceled. I know if this is a person trying to buy a home or not. I know if this is a person who's been in the system, and I had consultation with them four times or not, so I can compartmentalize and deal with people accordingly. And it's just it's a beautiful, beautiful system if you have the coin to set it up. And
I was just about to say.
And the time and the effort to put into it.
I was just about to say, Infusionsoft is awesome. Like, I've sat in a couple of presentations, I've seen it, and I'm just like, oh, okay. And Fusionsoft is like the Rolls Royce of email marketing for small business.
That, and, you know, I heard ClickFunnels is pretty well too. Does pretty well too.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question. What's the Honda version of Infusionsoft?
I mean, you got convert. I mean, they all serve a purpose, right? Right. And it all comes down to you as a business owner saying, which system will lighten my load the best, mm-hmm. right? Because everyone does business differently. I personally like a more personal touch, and Infusionsoft allows me to do that. Well, I haven't experienced ConvertKit or ClickFunnels and things like that. So I think if you're going to do your research on which one will give me the business I want in the end, in the 5 to 10 years from now. If I was to do this all over again, I would have started with Infusionsoft. I didn't. I just had like Gmail and Excel sheets. I was letting a lot of stuff fall through the cracks. I wasn't following up with people. I didn't have a promotional campaign around the holidays or the new year or my business cycle. So when I got Infusionsoft, I was like, I'm going to pay so much for this damn system. I better use it, right? And I realized that it was the best thing ever mm-hmm. for me.
I love it. So where were you before? So let's back up a little bit, because you mentioned that you now have a team of 7. Mm-hmm. So before you acquired a team, how many people were you handling? Do you remember?
I was handling, I was doing around my first opening month, I did around 15,000. But here's the kicker. My pricing was a third of what I charge now. So if I had to go, well,
okay, wait, do you do something different other than what's on the website? Because I've seen your website. I feel like I don't know, the prices may go up eventually, but.
Yeah, they most likely will go up soon.
Oh, maybe. So maybe. I won't say what the number is. If you're listening, you better run to that.
Well, I'm introducing. So I do a lot of strategic. I'll get back to this question on how many I started with, but I do a lot of strategic things, right? So mm-hmm. if I'm trying to get market share from a Lexington Law, mm-hmm. right? I'm dealing with people who only think of credit repair. I can't be so much higher than them.
Right.
And because some people only think in numbers, right? They won't give me an opportunity to speak with them. So my numbers have to be good enough where you say, you know what, let me just talk to this guy. Mm-hmm. And once I have you on the phone, even if you go to speak to someone else, it's just not enough. So my numbers will always kind of be in a realm where it makes sense to hold off the big dogs and keep the smaller companies honest, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're charging more than I am and you're only doing credit repair, you got a problem, especially if someone's just looking at numbers. But my first month out of the gate was around 14,000, and my pricing was around $59.99 at that point.
Oh my God. How many people is that?
233. So what it did for me was my goal was to always be bulk, right? Mm-hmm. I always wanted to have, and when you get to the 200 mark, it really forces you to level up, it forces you to hire staff really quickly or forces you to get systems in place. So that was always my end goal. A lot of people start businesses like, I just want to replace my job income instead of thinking 10 years out. Mm-hmm. My end goal was I want to be able to, when my daughter she's 3 now, but when she's of age to work 15, 16, I want to be able to say, hey, here's a position for you so you can learn how we do things, right? So I needed test cases. I use Apple as a great example where, you know, they release a beta of something, everyone's working on the bugs and it fixes their systems. So I learned really quickly how to communicate with people. I learned really quickly, you know, what I need to get in place for email. I learned really quickly how, you know, some people like to be talked to at this hour versus that hour because I had the test cases in there. And secondly, I was also doing this while I had had money coming in from my other job. Mm. So I had to learn how to do time management. So it was a lot of things in place that I learned a huge lesson. And then of course, you know, I raised prices after I figured out my systems in place and just offered a better and better product. another thing by being a little bit low. And I know a lot of business owners never say that. You always say, charge what you're worth, charge what you're worth. Well, I also knew that it's a word of mouth game. Mm-hmm. Right? I needed social proof. I'm the new kid on the block. I needed to prove to people that I can produce results. Mm-hmm. So my early adopters gave me social proof. They literally gave me my first set of testimonials, right? They gave me my first set of results. So a lot of my stuff was just looking at the market and seeing who was dominating and who sucked, and not do the sucky stuff and then be better than the person who was dominating.
Hmm. Where did you learn entrepreneurship?
I don't think you can learn entrepreneurship. I think you either are entrepreneur or you're not. There's no school for that. I went to IT school. I mean, I was always pretty good at managing people and controlling the narrative. I was a project manager, Department of Homeland Security. I managed, I took a staff from 6 to 30, about $10 million in contract revenue. So I learned a lot by that hiring and firing process. And I'm a systems guy. I'm a Capricorn. I like things to work in a certain manner. So I just took that approach and I said, all right, I want to teach people finance that work for me. How do you show the masses how to budget the way that work for you? How do you show the masses? How do you communicate with somebody who has no clue about finances? Mm-hmm. So I use my knowledge as a project manager. I read a lot of persuasion books, right? Everything we do is sales at the end of the day. Even if you're an employee, you're selling your ability to do your damn job, right? So by constantly reading those books and then working with people one-on-one, you learn really quickly.
Gotcha.
A lot of fails too. A lot of failure and then adjusting.
That was actually going to be my next question. How are you able to be so personal with everyone, with all these people, without getting burned out?
See, that's where the passion and the purpose come in. See, mm-hmm. What a lot of people don't realize, a lot of people get into business or these businesses because they want money. But money is a horrible master. I'm literally, this is, if I wasn't talking to you right now, I'll be prepping for the next day or prepping for my next presentation, right? Because I love it so much. So I have this hunger and this desire for finance now because of my mother's situation and never wanting to be in that predicament, that it's something I'm going to do anyway. Mm. I just happen to be getting paid for it. No, seriously, like when I was in IT, I did it for the money. I'm not even going to lie. I did it for the money. I did it for the freedom. Coming from West Philadelphia, I never knew anyone who made the money that I was going to be able to make. So to me, it was like, you know what? Suck it up. Shut up. You hate this. You hate the people who you work with, but you're getting paid so much. Do your thing. Cool. When I moved to this realm, you don't have to ask me to get up early. You don't have to ask me to stay up late. I wake up every day of the week at 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning, like clockwork. Mm. And I put in my 12 to 13 hour days. Right. And I'm fine. And I love it. I will put in, there's some times where I put in 14 to 15 hours, whether I'm studying something or being prepared. It's just when you are in love with what you do, it's not work. So when someone texts me or communicates with me and it's about their finances, I'm like, thank you. It's kind of like, you know, you basically give me my favorite food every day and I'm not getting fat. Why not?
Got you. So then I'm assuming then if someone is in a business and they are not loving what they do and it does feels like work, then I presume from what you've said, that means it's time to do something different.
I would say that person will get burnt out. They won't be it when the market changes and shifts. They wouldn't want to do the additional research to do that. For example, let me give you a great example, right? Mm-hmm. So we all know that Instagram just pulled, you know, some craziness on Snapchat, mm-hmm. with the stories right now.
Right.
If you are just in this, if you are a Snapchat developer or the owner of Snapchat and you don't love what you do, as in like with Zuckerberg, his whole thing for starting was, I want to connect the world, right? He didn't give two penny. He didn't give two shits about making money. It was about connecting the world and the mission. If that's not your drive, when a competitor comes in and punches you in the stomach like that, you're gonna give up. You're gonna give up. Most businesses don't make it past the first 18 months anyway. So what happens when you don't have money coming in? What happens when you fail? You're working so hard at something for 12 hours a day and your launch fails. You're not gonna wanna take a step back and retool, right? So that's where that passion and that purpose comes into play. So if you don't love what you do, as in when I tell people, what is that thing that makes you forget to eat? What is that thing that makes you forget to maybe move bowels, or shit, you might be someone that's on, you ain't take a shower for a day or two, right? That's what you need to do, because that's what you're going to be successful at. You're going to be bigger, stronger, faster. You're going to read more. You're going to go in more. And people are going to feel you in your voice. Like, you're going to do a presentation and people will be like, oh my God, I got to work with you. I felt that. That's what you want, period. If you don't have that feeling, what the hell are you in business for? Why would you spend 12 to 14 hours a day slaving, going hard for some shit that you don't believe in? That's crazy to me.
And I think you have a point.
It ain't enough money in the world
to make you work that hard for something you don't love.
Because at the end of the day, it's about the work. Mm. Money is a reward for a job well done.
Gotcha.
Period.
I like that. Money is a reward for a job well done.
And you do a good job when you love the shit.
I got you. What's the best business advice you've ever gotten?
The best business advice I've ever gotten. It is a weird one, but hire before you need it. My old boss, my old mentor, he's one of those hire before the curve things. So you got to hire before you need it, because sometimes when it rains, it pours. Mm-hmm. And you also, another thing is, sometimes good is good enough. When you are in your own business and you've been the master of all, you're starting out, you have no assistant, and you're printing the letters, you're signing this and you're doing that, and you're running to the bank, you can get caught up in being excellent in $2 shit when you need to be excellent in the $1,000 shit, right? So those two go hand in hand for me. What is the things that you can offload so you can get back to the dollar task? Period. You don't need to be you the best letter sender in the world. For why? That's not going to bring you in more clients. You need to be talking to people, right? And then my third, I got a couple of them. My third thing is, lead generation is life. If you're not generating leads, you're not doing anything correctly. And I learned this from my real estate folks. You have to be proactive in your lead generation. Business doesn't come to you because you're cute or your branding was awesome and all that. You got to get the customers first. You got to get the customers by meeting when they are and then selling them properly. So if you don't have a lead generation strategy, if you're not constantly bringing in leads, constantly being told no, constantly losing clients and upgrading services, there's a chance where you may not exist in a year or two.
That's legit. I love it. What advice would you give someone looking to get to where you are now?
I don't think I'm at any place in particular.
Okay, sir. Well, you quit your job.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that, and I don't want to take up your entire evening because I know you have tons of stuff to do. But if you want to touch on what made you finally take the leap, because you mentioned you were working with 200 people and still working full time.
What made me take the leap was my child. My child and my wife. When you don't have kids that commute to work while you getting that fat check, it's cool, right? You don't have someone to come home to ask you, worry about their day. But when you have a kid and it takes you 45 minutes to get to work, you're with people that you dislike, and you know, you get home and you know, your kid goes, is going to sleep. You only got 10 to 15 minutes with them. You know, sometimes that can wear on a person, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if you don't have to be in that particular predicament. So it was being able to have the lifestyle that I wanted. I didn't want the cubicle. Nothing wrong with working for the rest of your life, but I wanted something different. I wanted to be able to control my own destiny. So having my time back was key. And I think when you're running your business, you can run it your own way. You can set things up. And obviously you're working very hard, but you have control over it. No one's telling me when the break or when the vacation, or if it's a snowstorm and the school closes, I can't take off of work. You know, certain things didn't sit well with me. So that was the angle for me on the quitting of the job.
Gotcha. So someone who's looking to get to a point where they're ready to quit their job, what kind of advice would you give them?
So my strategy is, when you quit your job, I want you to quit smart. I'm not a jump out the window and build the shit on the way down type of person, right? I want you to have a proven concept, not your friends either. I don't want none of the sales from your immediate family or your friends count. I want you to have a proven concept of your business by having 10 to 100 clients or whatever makes sense for you before you make that leap. Secondly, I want you to understand that when you're an adult with responsibilities, no one's going to save you. Right. Despite when you put your little Facebook posts up and I'm starting my own business and you getting all these fucking likes, none of them people are going to come and pay your fucking bills when you over there eating ramen and plastic fucking furniture. Mm-hmm. So I need you to take a step back, get out your feelings, and understand this is business. And when you're in a business, you're in the business of solving a problem for somebody. So you need to solve enough problems for people where you can replace half to 75% of that gross or that net income plus benefits before you walk out. It's going to suck. It's going to be hard working two things at a time, but it'll be worth it because you'll know you have something that's proven. Mm-hmm. I can tell you this, and before my business popped in 2014, if I would have just left in 2014 when we only made $10,000 that year on my side business, would have been a problem when you have a house, a car, and all that stuff, responsibility. So I need you to take a step back and say, you know what, I'm going to use this job as my safety net. I'm going to go as hard as I can on these off hours. I need to prove that I have a sustainable business before I put my family at jeopardy. Mm-hmm. So whether it's clients, whether it's revenue, whether it's, you know, a contract, you have to decide what that number is for you. For us, it was, you know, it's easy to quit your job when you're making $10 an hour, right? Mm-hmm. And you're living a $10 an hour life. Let me just say that. When you're living a $10 an hour life and you're going into entrepreneurship and you make, you know, $50,000 your first year, you've already replaced your income. But if you're a person who's making mid six figures, nearly 200,000, and you have another spouse making that same amount of money too, you better have a fucking great speech on why you giving up 300. You see what I mean? So it was a little bit different for me. It was a little bit different for me because we quit at the same time.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh! I need to talk to your wife then.
Well, it was a scenario where it was, you know, Olivia was two or something like that, or one or some change. And, you know, in Virginia, they closed down the school systems for a flake. And I'm a program manager. So I was the first person to introduce telework in my company. So I'm all like, I'm staying home. Fuck, y'all work for me. So I'm cool. I'm home. She got going to work. They pissing her off at her job. So I was like, listen. I'm a Capricorn. I'm an INTJ. I'm like, what you not going to do is complain. So my words exactly, fuck that job. So she quit. And then shortly after that, I quit because our finances were structured where we were only living off one income anyway. We already had rental properties come in, and then I'm bringing in money from the business I want to be in. You know, we didn't have to stay in that position. So it was pretty easy for us because we've been living for this moment for the last 3 to 4 years, just waiting for something, waiting for it to pop off. That's all.
Gotcha. Okay.
So to add on to that, another person, if you want to have successful business, you need to set your business up for success. You shouldn't be having much credit card debt or debt over 7% interest, if you got student loans, I get it. You shouldn't have an issue saving. You shouldn't have an issue managing your money, right? Because when you're running a business, you're basically managing the books. So if you're not in control of your finances, you know, you're looking a little shaky in your business, despite what your gross numbers are stating anyway, because, you know, gross numbers don't mean shit.
Mm-hmm. It's about how much you keep, not how much you make.
Exactly. All these people online posting these gross numbers. I'm like, tell them to post that profit and loss.
Yeah.
Tell them to post that balance sheet. Tell them to post that, well, that 1120X.
Don't have a
don't play me. Like, that's what I tell people all the time. You posting your PayPal 1099K. Like, where that shit don't talk about refunds. That shit don't talk about chargebacks. Show me your QuickBooks. Then I know it's real. It's men lie, women lie, but QuickBooks is too hard to cook. That's my fucking theory on it.
Look, ain't nobody cooking. Look, I came out of college during Enron, so I don't know about that, but I hear you.
Well, not these Facebook business people. They ain't cooking no QuickBooks.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So what's next for you? You already told us where we can find you. What's happening next for you?
The next thing is I'm attacking the investment industry.
Oh, snap.
So okay. I think I did a pretty good job of attacking the credit repair folks. Now I'm going to start branding and pivoting my message to target that. And I'm also going to brand and pivot my message to target the real estate side a little bit more. Okay. I'm a fan of domination and learning what works and then just coming out with these full-fledged projects, like Beyonce just dropped her last CD. Like, it just comes out of the blue, like, holy shit.
Okay.
Because a lot of people are like, yo, who is this guy? Like, he just came out of the blue in the last year or two, and I completely – you probably can't even mention – credit repair on social media without my name popping up now.
Okay. Awesome. Wait, so how do you determine domination? I mean, I guess 500 clients is it's definitely
domination to me is if you know, someone compares your product to another person's in that same industry product, they come back to you.
Mm.
Right. Or you can say, or you can poke holes in someone else's product. Right. So it's kind of like if you compare my product offering, my pricing to a credit repair person, there's no competition. Right. So now I got to figure out the angle on the investment side. Like, okay, who's dominating in this area? What are they charging? So I can figure out what are they doing? How, if they're not going deep enough, I need to go deeper. If they're charging X, I need to charge Y. Not saying undercut them, but I need to be better. Right. So, domination is when the topic comes up, your name is close by.
Got it. I hear you. Well, that's that. One more question. We're done. What's your favorite song?
My favorite song.
Mm-hmm.
Toss up. Jay-Z, public service announcement. I just love the whole swag on that whole song. It's short. It's too short too. And the other one is Jay-Z, Can I Live? Love that one. And Jay-Z, Party Life. I'm a Jay-Z.
Clearly.
Jay-Z guy.
Okay, I'll make sure I let all the Jay-Z fans know they need to listen to this interview. Well, that's pretty much it, Dom. I like I said, I totally appreciate you for saying yes. Like, I'm so grateful. Like, definitely grateful.
That's the other thing. I say yes to everybody, everything. Because my position is that, first of all, no one's too big to have a conversation. I think that's just ridiculous if, you know, you can't have a conversation with somebody. You liking somebody's Facebook status, y'all Facebook friends, but you can't hop on the phone with them to help out with their project is crazy to me. Mm-hmm. And I never want to, and I think that's how you pretty much stay connected, essentially. Mm-hmm. You never know. You never know who you can learn from.
Absolutely.
So just stay open.
Absolutely. Well, once more, folk can find you where?
They can find me at yourfinancessimplified.com. They can find me at Instagram at yourfinancessimplified. They can find me on Facebook at yourfinancessimplified. They can find me on Facebook as Dominic Brown. And also, if you want a copy of my free 101 credit tips book and my 3-hour financial masterclass, you can text the word credit to 844-703-0379. Just text the word credit to that number. My assistant will take over the rest and send you the ebook as well as the class.
I love it. Do you keep your scopes up forever?
I do now.
Okay, thank you.
I keep them up forever now.
Thank you. Appreciate that, because I still got to watch this perfect credit score one. I forgot. We didn't even mention the fact that you got a perfect credit score.
Yeah, I recently found out I got the 850. I got interviewed by Equifax. I only need TransUnion to interview me now so I can have all three of the major credit bureaus. But
man, you better come on with it.
I did a the Periscope. Man, the trolls on Periscope or something else, man. Yeah. I was getting all types of people. I was getting haters. I was getting hoes. I was getting everything. I was like, Lord Jesus.
All the H's.
Right. Luckily, I'm a professional thought dodger, and I was using all my moves that night.
Do you block them?
Sometimes I do. See, here's another thing. Here's my theory on trolls and haters in general, right? So the most people who are going to buy your services move in silence, right? They don't ask you questions. They might ask you questions, but they're not ignorant. Mm-hmm. On public broadcast. But then you got the people on the sideline who are like, they're kind of skeptical. And the trolls allow you to, you know, exert your knowledge a little bit better, because if they see you handling the troll accordingly and still giving off value, they want to rock with you. So what a lot of people see is they see like, man, you handle the troll so well, you're so real. And as soon as they start saying you're so real and you're so down to earth, it kind of works in your favor. So I'll let them rock out as long as they don't get too disrespectful. That's the only time when I block them. When they start trying to talk about my family, okay, I just block you. But other than that, I'm open for a dialogue. You're just going to allow me to
reintroduce yourself.
You're allow me to show how much I know.
Your name is Dom.
Yeah, I'm going to like, thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to display my knowledge to people who are on the fence. So they ask you a whole bunch of stupid questions, and you know, you catch them up in their logic, and everyone thinks you're so smart. And I'm like, thank you. You allow me to prove my point, idiot. So and here's the other thing, man. If you don't have trolls, if you don't have haters, you're not popping. No one hates on someone who's not winning. Mm. It just doesn't happen. And the fact that, and what I tell people is the fact that, you know, my periscopes are long, 2 hours, 3 hours long. So the fact that you've been here for 2 hours just to hate, I appreciate you.
Oh,
you could
have
been sleeping. You could have been hating on somebody else, but you hating on me, that means I'm winning, man. So I love it.
Yeah. I mean, you from West Philadelphia. I'm from the south side of Chicago. I think we kind of like that back and forth. I think that.
Absolutely.
I'm all like, a little puppet and just like old school Jonah. Yes, let's get it.
Secondly, I deal with people off the shade room. Like, you think a Periscope troll are going to do something with me? Like, I get, please. I grew up with this.
This episode of the Freedom Friends Show is brought to you by the Coach Your Damn Self Challenge. If you're ready to take back your power and achieve all of your dreams and goals, then join the Coach Your Damn Self Challenge today. That's CoachYadamnSelf.com. CoachYadamnSelf.com.